and welcome to episode 246 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the upcoming Indigo Park, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And Skyping in from what he likes to call the funky bunker, it's Tony Esmond.
Isn't that where Neil Adams, what were they called? The Krusty Bunkers, weren't they? That was where Neil Adams' art studio. Yeah. I think
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Why was it called the Krusty Bunker? Is that just because they were older?
I'm not sure. I'll find out for next episode. There you go.
Oh, that's something.
Yeah. I think it's worthy quickly of saying that this week, Johnny Cannon's favourite song is Down Under by Men at Work.
It's a good song.
There's going to be an ongoing sort of Twitter war probably between Tony and Johnny Cannon coming soon. So we'll keep you posted on that. But also this week, we're very pleased to be joined by writer, artist, and creator of The Citric Arc and the anthology series Lost Time, JWC. Yes. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Jen. You're right.
Welcome.
Yes.
Yeah. What time is it with you? Because you're in Phoenix, as I understand. Is that right?
Yep. It is currently 12:40, so midday. Very nice.
Kind of in the future. That's cool, isn't it?
Someone's calling us for what we're calling her from the future.
Past. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Or are we calling from the past? I don't understand how time works. So I don't watch Doctor Who. It'll give me a nosebleed. Tony doesn't watch it for other reasons.
Yeah.
Yes, but JWC, who is also called Jen to her friends and us.
Yep. Yes. I think we're friends, Jen. I know we've only known each other for 10 minutes, but I feel that we're friends.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Good. Good.
Yes, she's going to be with us for the whole show to talk about her work, which you've probably heard me mention it a few times on the show, and definitely is going to be worth exploring. We'll probably talk about some other things to keep you entertained, maybe how to look after several cactuses at once, or cacti.
Yes.
Which Jen, how many cacti do you have, Jen?
I have two. One, well, they're both gifts. I did not go out and acquire these of my own volition. But the main thing is apparently overwatering them is what kills them. That's what people do all the time. But they do need to be watered every couple weeks, which is why I am here today to make sure they don't die in the other direction.
Yeah.
So you popped in the office to water your cacti and speak to us. It's very kind of you. We do appreciate it, mate.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt, because you're in Phoenix, and that's pretty hot over there at the best of times, isn't it? So, look after your cacti, people. See, knowledge, this show's all about information.
Yeah.
I mean,
cactus care.
Most of it's nonsense, but the guests normally give us a few bits of
the information's there.
Yeah. Not in the bits that we talk about. It's our guests that do all the good stuff. And do you know where else you can find good stuff?
Comic House?
Yes, it's our sponsor, Comic House. Hell yeah. Why are you not reading Comic House? It's a very Comic House centered show in some ways. But yes, they are our sponsor. They're the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and we love them. They're fighting the good fight in the name of indie comics worldwide. If you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on their database. So if you self-publish and you've got boxes of comics that you want another avenue to try and shift and get out to people, list your book on there. You can list it on there for free and start selling straight away. Nice to see some more sort of printed books becoming available on Comic House, some more creators.
Yeah, there's a real variety on there. Yeah. I was looking at the added books this week, and they couldn't be more different, could they?
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about it.
And in these days of very expensive actual comics, because they have to come from the great state, that the great nation that Jen is from, why not read stuff on Comic House?
Yes.
Indeedy.
Yes, and you can read it on their app, which we love, we're using. More and more people should be using, and this is the perfect time to start using it, should we say, because there is a huge selection of indie digital titles on the Comic House database on the app. And what sort of stuff is there on at the moment, Dan?
Well, this week we've got Lima by Gustavo Vargas, Arc Song 6, Soma Eden Volume 1, The Last Arrival. That's also available in hard.
Watch out for that. There might be a review of that going up tomorrow.
Oh, excellent. Cool.
Yeah.
And Nothing by Gareth A. Hopkins, which I talked about last week, is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, The Last Arrival 1 and 2 are both available for print comics for sale on there. So
nice.
Cool.
Go check it out. Pete was offering a deal on, if you're stuck indoors, self-quarantining, if you sign up with a code, which I handily don't have to hand, you can get some extra days on Comic House, but we'll make sure to post that on.
I think COVID-19. I've got a feeling it's that, isn't it?
Really? That's
pretty
cheeky.
Pretty on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, call it that. But yeah, you enter the code and you can get some extra days on Comic House to read all the fantastic titles.
While we're talking, I'll look it up. Yeah. Oh, I know he put it on the Facebook, didn't he? Yeah.
Shall I feel?
I think it's COVID-19 and it's all capitalized. I'm not sure if that matters when you type it in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Nice one. Yeah. Very cool of you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So yep.
We're useless, but the guests are the people that help us.
Yeah. That's stuff that we should have looked up for.
Yeah, we should have looked. Yeah. But the actual app itself is basically like Netflix for comics, only £3 a month, and you get access to the enormous and ever growing library of digital indie comics, a lot of which we've talked about on this show. A lot of great creators that have been on this show and have now got their books on there. There's tons to find out. And also, there's a 14-day free trial. So go to comichouse.com, find out more today. That went all right.
That's Comic House. Yeah.
You must be tough for that one.
Yeah. I mean,
we're going to talk conventions now, aren't we? Because people who can't. There's a few convention changes, aren't there? You wanted it. We're going to have a little chat about.
Yes, yes, yes.
What do you want to start with?
Before we get stuck into the bones of this week's episode, obviously, there's a lot going on in the world at the moment. Wherever you are, whoever you are, hopefully you're staying safe and healthy and hygienic. which we always laugh at. We usually laugh about the comics people not being hygienic, but I think the comics industry.
So I know they cancelled the Comic Mart today, but then he cancelled it a couple of days ago, obviously. And I was saying, that will stop a lot of people getting both COVID and fleas.
I think I do have to give a shout out to my local comic store, Ash Avenue Comics, because I went in there a week ago, and when you purchase stuff, you actually get a free squirt or pump of hand sanitizer, just to make sure everybody's staying healthy. Yeah. You know,
that's
good point.
That's quite a good idea. Yeah. And in this day and age, where we really hope that all the comic book stores out there sort of survive this, you know, they're doing what they can, but there are some comics events, and we like to keep you sort of up to date with the latest news on events and stuff like that. There's a couple of events that have moved. Obviously, there are ones that are being cancelled, but we're not going to talk about those just yet. You know, rather than downers, it's just sort of like, you're still going to have an amazing day, it's just going to be later in the year. That's basically what it is. First one, True Believers, a show you know that we love and we visit and we cause all kinds of chaos. even though they've already had the show this year, they're pushing next year's show to the
2021 is being pushed to 2022, isn't it? Is that right?
Yes. That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there will be no True Believers 2021. But there will be one in 2022.
So, which would have been the first weekend in February, I think he does it, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Stuart.
Yeah.
Good old Stu.
There's a big message about it on the True Believers website, isn't there? I believe.
Yeah, there is. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it's on Twitter if you follow him. Yeah. And Token Nerd on Twitter.
Yeah.
I suppose chronologically, the first one, though, is MCM London. So MCM London, which would have been over the weekend of the last weekend of May.
Yeah.
It's now been moved to the 10th to the 12th of July.
Yeah, 10th, 11th, and 12th of July in the XL.
Yeah.
They've
lost a few guests. As I understand it, you were quite interested in seeing. Is it the Critical Role people you like?
Yeah.
They've cancelled, haven't they?
Yeah, my plan was to go down, completely nerd out, and then also check out Comics Village and just surprise people by showing my ugly mug and buying some comics. But that's obviously...
Nobrow will still be there, so we've just had our date moved to the July date. Yeah.
It will be interesting. Obviously, all of these events are doing what they can. Hopefully, they're keeping in communication with you. If you've got a table, or if you're an exhibitor, if you've got a ticket, no matter what it is, hopefully people are keeping up to date and communicating with you about what's happening to their event.
Yeah.
But you know, whenever it is, hopefully you'll still be able to make it, because schedules. You know, because with these bigger shows as well, it's such a major commitment, isn't it? I know certainly when we did MCM last year, it was really about, you know, getting it, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and making sure that everything was fixed, wasn't it, Dan?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I was crashing at Tony's, so it was making sure that, you know, he had sterilized the entire house.
The other thing is, I suppose, is there was the comics illustration event in Waterloo in May. Van's comic event being run by Joe Stone, that's been cancelled now,
yeah,
as well. I still haven't heard about Leamington. Do we know officially about Leamington yet?
We don't know about that yet, no. But I do know Lawless has been cancelled this year.
Yes, that's right. So, and for those who didn't hear last week, Cardiff Comics Carnival on the 29th of March has been cancelled as well.
Yeah.
As it stands, Nottingham's still going ahead. They put a message out this week, Kevin, Kel, to say, look, we're still going ahead. Still a while off.
Yeah, and Thought Bubble is still going ahead, and a lot of you people out there will no doubt have got your confirmation on tape.
Yeah.
We've just got to say this.
Watch out, folks.
We'll see you there.
Hey.
Yeah.
And there's a little room we might be doing a panel, so hold on to your hats.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
We'll see. It's early days, and naturally other things are becoming sort of a priority here with a lot of people, but, you know, we love the Thought Bubble guys, and they're doing good work. And also, they're like one of many people who have put out links to free collection of comic books, you know, resources. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going about at the moment, which is, you know...
Fantastic.
You have to look at the upsides to these things, and seeing a creative community just completely sort of say, well, here's my... You know, you can't come to a convention to see my table. Here, have some of my comics for free. That's been going everywhere.
Should we mention that thread now?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a great thread on the Facebook page of... we put a thread up, and I think we're up to about 40 comics now, 40, 50 comics on there available to read for free. If you go, members of our Facebook page, pop over there, and there's loads of stuff, be it old fanzines, there's new comics, all sorts of things on there. Yeah, it's well worth a visit.
So if you do Facebook, then it's the group Awesome Comics Talk. Just search for that, join it, and just get involved. So,
speaking of Thought Bubble, Jen, I think that's probably our main one that I always suggest to American guests that they'd like. I think you'd probably dig it. It's a good event, that one.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
What are like comic events like for you over there, like in your area? Because we talk about it on the show, because obviously we're a UK show, and we have I don't think we can really fathom that like in the US it's such a vast,
especially sort of regional, like, really, because I do New York, and I did one in LA last year, and I do New York every year, but I haven't done San Diego or anything like that. What's it like in Arizona? Is that
is there a scene? We do have a scene. We used to have Phoenix Comic-Con, but then apparently San Diego Comic-Con decided that they owned the word Comic-Con.
Now we've got
I think it's Phoenix Fan Fusion, which is actually
a terrible name.
I know. I kept wanting to call it the Phoenix Fan Fest, which is like a little bit better.
Fan Fusion. That sounds quite saucy, to be fair.
Which I think it's actually a better description of what's going on, because they do have comics, but it's also like anime, movie stuff.
Tony.
they actually have... So I've only... Let's see. The day I went was on a Sunday, so it was still packed, but like you could actually, you know, move around.
Right.
Let's see. It's probably canceled this year, but... I haven't checked. It's usually in our convention center downtown, so it's almost certainly like the whole city's in a state of emergency, I think. So it's not happening.
I mean, I bet you're not watching The Walking Dead over there now. I bet the ratings of that have slipped.
Who is still watching it?
But do you you're right. Do you have like little... We have a sort of tradition over here of much smaller regional ones that, let's face it, aren't that well attended, because they're just sort of illustration-y, comic-y, little local, almost like, I suppose the comparison would be like a town hall event for you, something like that. Do you have that sort of thing?
So we do. We have a couple. They're really hard to advertise, and also even the... Like, I know there was a local one, I think, about 6 months back. The problem is, even though it's technically in the same city as me, it's still like an hour drive away.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's specific to Phoenix. Phoenix is one of the most like spread out cities in the U.S. So right. I'm guessing like cities on the East Coast probably don't have the same problem. But yeah, it's really difficult to even for a local one to even get there. And you have to think like, so San Diego Comic-Con, it's in the same part of the country as me, but it's like an 8-hour drive. And that's not because of traffic. That's just, it takes that long to get there through the desert from Phoenix. Yeah.
Wow. Eight hours takes you the length of our country.
Yeah.
And more. Yeah. I can drive 2 hours into Scotland from London in that time. You know, yeah. So that's the sort. Have you ever been over here at all, or?
I did. Yeah, last May I was in Scotland.
Oh, nice.
But I flew into London, so I actually got to ride the tube to get to the train station to get to Scotland. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, that was
Scotland. Scotland's gorgeous, man. Love Scotland. Mm. Whereabouts did you go?
So I was up in Glasgow, and I didn't really get to see any of it until my last night there, which I saw pretty much all of downtown by accident.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, because my train back to London was leaving at 4:30 in the morning. I got up at 2:15. My cell phone didn't work, so I couldn't call an Uber. So it was actually a really fun 45-minute speed walk / light jog all the way across the city to get to the train station.
Glasgow's a lovely city. It used to have I can say this because my mother's from there, but it used to have a certain reputation for being quite rough. But it's actually quite an arty town now. It's a great place, you know. Really nice place.
I still need to get up to Scotland.
Yeah, I've never been. To my shame.
Well, you know the cons I've been up to there. Brilliant. Yeah. I had a great time. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, so, the scene over there is really bustling now as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we've already started, it seems, without any sort of proper introduction. But those that would, like I said earlier, those who would have listened to the show know that I'm a big fan of Jen's work. And since discovering her through Comic House, actually, it was because this all came about because of Comic House. It's our sponsor.
Gene Pool.
Yeah, Gene Pool. It's all your fault, Pete. I've been looking forward to talking about Jen's work for quite some time. Going from the Citric Arc to obviously Lost Time, which is a very interesting set of books, to say the least.
Yeah.
But before we get a second to that, obviously, you're making comics yourself. You're an indie comics creator. But what is your sort of origin with comics? You know, what got you to comics, or how long have you been into sort of the scene?
Okay, yeah. So let's see. I first got into, actually didn't get into comics. I got into like anime and manga stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just because I don't think there was even a comic shop near my house, at least as far as I know, but we have a bookstore and a lot of the manga or manga volumes, they end up there.
Yeah.
So that's how I first started getting into just sort of the basic format of reading it. And let's see, I never even considered making comics until 2013. I took a 3-week comics class over the summer. Essentially the whole thing was that, that was my big introduction to sort of like European and American comics. And we had to make like a 7-to-8-page comic for that. And for that, I made Overheated, the one chapter that ended up in the Citric arc. And then I just kept working from there because I really enjoy doing it.
Oh, wow. So you literally just got bitten by the bug and then just kept going.
So what sort of titles, Jen?
Let's see. So it was a lot of the big DC stuff. In terms of the stuff that the teacher focused on. But then I also, I actually went back to a lot of the manga I'd read before. So I was really into Clamp. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No.
So I looked up later, it's a team of four women. And they did a bunch of stuff, and they do a bunch of different styles and sort of serious tones. Like they do some romance and a lot of like apocalypse, end of the world, like. They have one big series, X-1999.
Not anymore, to be fair.
Yeah. No, times have changed. But it stuck with me because they never finished that series because it was about the world ending in 1999. And I guess 1999 passed. And I think the magazine that they were doing it for ended up closing and they couldn't find a new person to publish it. So I think it's like 18 volumes into what should have been like a 21 volume arc.
It's a cutthroat business over there. Yeah. Isn't it? They know what they're doing. Yeah. Okay. Oh, let's look that up. Recommend it?
I would absolutely recommend it, but just be aware that they never finished it.
Okay.
Although they,
but that's what real life's like, Jen. Sometimes real life doesn't end, does it? Do you know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but that was one of my thoughts, is that everything I ever write, even if I have like a larger plan for it, I'm going to make it feel like you're getting a whole thing, whatever you read. Okay. So you never...
You're going to get closure.
Yeah.
I mean, but then like with the Citric Arc, though, I mean, how many pages was that? I mean, you decided to jump in with an actual sort of proper, fully formed sort of book.
So it's a full book. It's like 126 pages, but it's made up of like 8-page or 16-page chunks.
Yeah.
Okay. And so by the time I started doing it, I knew I was going to do the whole thing, but it was a lot easier for me to break it up into smaller stories.
Yeah. And but we do sort of warn about like just be careful with your first project. So fair play to you for, you know, managing to put out 126-page like complete book.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and I think that's interesting that you chose to split it up in that way as well, because I guess for you working on it, was it a case of making it more manageable?
It was making it manageable, but also I knew I was going to be jumping around to sort of narratively different time point periods in the story, so it was made more sense to do that. And also, I just at the time, I was my one concern about doing a comic was I wasn't sure I could keep a consistent art style for that long.
Yeah.
And so breaking it up into different chunks, we had completely different like settings and tone. It gave a really good excuse to be able to change the art style a little bit for each section. And I actually think it made it better in the long term. But yeah, it also gave me the freedom to do that.
It makes it funner as well, doesn't it? You don't feel sort of tied down to a project if you're just doing it in those chunks sometimes as well, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I'd feel about it.
What inspired the story of that, though? You know, how did that kick off? Because that's most of your work actually is quite sort of, there's several meanings and it's quite emotional.
Yeah, so this is where it gets weird. So
we like weird. This is going to be
good.
Originally, I had an idea for a very elaborate time travel story. And so for that, I created this whole world. And then I was worried I wouldn't be good at writing science fiction. So now all the stories I've written are just different things that take place in that world.
Okay.
So it's, So it's kind of like, I guess if Tolkien wrote The Lord of the Rings and then didn't write it and instead wrote a short story about two hobbits going to dinner and Bilbo is like mentioned briefly.
Yeah. But that's still quite a brave thing to do. I mean, essentially the Marvel Universe, isn't it? You know, it's like an interlocking narrative that you can just play with bits here and there. Is that kind of the idea? Or
yeah, basically. So I'm pretty good at sticking to things, but I can get really bored if there's no structure or purpose to it. So I thought, okay, I've got this complete inbuilt structure, but within it I can just do sort of whatever I want.
I get that. And it's very personal based, isn't it? It's very conversational based. Is that something that yanks your chain? Do you enjoy that side of things, do you?
I do, yeah. Sort of Well, I mean, you know, I don't really... I mean, who else is it going to... I can't read other people's minds. I can't sort of get into other people's heads. So, sorry, it kind of... I don't mean it to be personal, but it kind of ends up that way.
Right.
Because, I can't draw on other people's experiences or what they feel about things or... anything. Just do the best you can, but it always sort of ends up reflecting whatever I'm thinking about.
And then you know, by doing that, I mean, like we always say, you're writing the comics that you want to write, and no doubt you've been surprised at the connection that they've made with people who have read it.
I was pretty surprised, because all these I always plan to, I guess, release them or put them out somewhere, but I'm in terms of creative process, I'm not that good at sort of figuring out how to write for what other people are going to like. And I think for certain people's creative process, that actually helps them a lot. Like, I think people who do the web comics where they put a page up, you know, two times a week, I think that they sort of feed off of the idea of being excited of how people are going to react to it. And it's sort of a conversation between them and the audience. But that doesn't really work for me. I get... to trying to get into someone else's head and figuring out what they're gonna think of things, and it sort of is
that's an interesting point
it's
you bring
not
up
good for it, yeah,
that is really interesting. That is kind of, and I never really thought of it this way, but that's kind of the difference between web comics and more of a collected edition kind of mentality. Is the web, well, see what you think, Dan, because the web comics, you're getting almost like a constant feedback, aren't you? You put 2 or 3 pages that week, and you're getting a constant feedback. But if you just hung back until you put a trade out, that would be like a year at a time. It would be a whole different ball game for you, would it? Or
yeah, I mean, like I, when I initially did the, got a story to link into this. When I first did Vanguard 9, I had people commenting saying like, "You've killed off all the characters. I'm done."
Spoilers.
Yeah,
like yeah, and they left, and I was like, okay, yeah. Well, I'm staying the course. And then I got there was one guy I remember, and he wrote back like a year or two later saying, "Oh, I came back to see what it was like, and I shouldn't have left. I really like shouldn't have doubted." Yes,
that's great.
Yeah.
That's
good. That's nice. Nice feedback. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because you're always going to have the reactionary reader. Cool, that's quite difficult to say.
Yeah,
yeah.
But comics will always have that. I mean, look at social media and the nonsense that's talked on there.
Yeah. Because we live in an immediate world, don't we? To direct this back at Jen, we do live in an immediate reaction to everything, aren't we? You know, we kind of put it online, and we almost hold our breath whatever we put online, don't we? It's a weird one, isn't it? How has the reactions been for your books? Do you get much feedback or?
Twitter has just been so nice, which is, I know famous last words there, but. at least all the feedback I've gotten back has been really positive, which I didn't think people were just going to come up and be mean about it. I mostly just didn't think I was going to get any reaction, so that was a nice surprise.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, especially like, you know, we're all creating comics in our own bubble, aren't we, really, you know, and they're very personal to us, but once they go out into the outside world, you know, how do they, you know, respond?
That's almost the good thing about small press is that we don't have to go to a marketing meeting to figure out who the next Darth Vader comic is going to be directed at. Yeah. We can just make comics that we want to make. And that's kind of where sometimes the best creativity comes from.
Mm.
Did you see that image? It went around a couple of weeks ago, but it was like the storyboard of the Disney Star Wars studio. And they had listed all the things that they wanted to cover. And it's like, I can't imagine making stories like that. It's real.
They're just subjects are getting away.
I thought that was fake. Was that actually real?
Yeah, maybe. I did.
Oh no.
Yeah, I thought it was real. Perhaps if it was fake, but like the idea of kind of making stories to order is kind of like.
And some of those subjects would clearly get in the way of good storytelling because you wouldn't things wouldn't come organically. I did wonder that as well, Jen. I'm not sure. Who knows? Who knows about the internet?
I thought it was a screen cap from like a video that had done like a promo video of them having this camp. And someone had taken the screen cap of them camera panned around. Maybe not. I'm happy to hold my hand up and say I was wrong.
I never saw anything saying it was fake. I just saw it and I assumed this seems like a fake thing that someone would make up. But it might be totally real.
It's weird though, because I presumed, I watched a certain video that had two characters in it called Safe Space and Snowflake. And I went away. I went away and dwelled on it because I'm an emotional 50-something Marvel fan. And I went back and I thought, no, this is definitely a wind-up. This is fake. And then it kind of was true, I think. I'm still not sure, to be fair.
Yes, it's true.
Is that the experimental internet gas one?
Yeah.
That's the one. Sorry.
Yep, that's the one, Jen. That's the one. Yeah.
I was in this coming issue of mine. I was going to do like a kind of like a pitch meeting where they tried to get this new team together, and ridiculous characters like that. And that's been...
It's absolutely
killed the joke. I can't do that now.
That's the thing. A lot of the descriptions sounded like those, because obviously with Vanguard, you do a lot of like character stuff that even if they're in the strip, it's played deadly serious. But you read it and there's a very biting, satire to your character creation and stuff.
That's bonkers. I just what editor thought, like I said, experimental internet gas. What does that even mean?
I will say it is. I truly believe that any sort of idea can work in context. So, for example, if the next Neil Breen movie is about experimental internet gas, I'm going to be on board 100%. Neil Breen can pull it off.
You're right. You are right. Or if the next who's the guy who did Four Lions and that sort of thing?
Chris Morris.
Chris Morris could easily do something about that. And you think, I agree. Totally.
It's all about context, isn't it? Yeah.
It's just kind of that you're kind of pitching the idea to the audience, and that's one of the lines you use. Don't use that line. It's, well, as you can see, what happens? You just get derided.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like those. I hate to say, I know we're getting slightly off subject, but it's a load of those millionaire celebrities singing the Beatles song this week.
Yeah,
that just made my anus curl up.
God.
Sorry, apologies, Jen. But it was so painful. It was like, oh my God, what is this nonsense?
What is this?
Yeah.
That's, yeah. But like, one last thing. That Sean Penn, they got him on for like to talk about like getting the military on the US streets. So, why are you talking to Sean Penn?
Was Madonna not available?
Yeah.
You know, what about Elmo? He's up next. Yeah. Let's get Elmo. I love Elmo, you know, by the like, way.
Yeah, in Team Wars. America, they've got the Film Actors Guild, FAG, and they like want to be involved in everything important, and they're just actors, and they've completely out of depth, and it's like that bit in real life. I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah. But, well, at least we've got Bono. Anyway, so. Yes.
Oh my God, he's not English, Jen. He ain't do with us. He's from Ireland.
It's that point of the show where the guest is wondering, what have I signed up for?
Why have I come done this?
Yeah, why have I done this? I've wasted a day. No, but anyway, going back to your comics and experimentation and narrative storytelling, obviously we've talked a bit about the Citric Arc, but then you chose to do quite an interesting project, which is the series of books called Lost Time, which is an anthology
really
series.
Love those books, mate. Yeah, yeah, absolutely love
them. They're brilliant, and they're hugely interesting for lots of different reasons, because it seems like an it feels like an anthology series where you've just kind of just done what you want. I know that's kind of what we always say you should do in comics, but the stories are very different. Some of them seem more autobiographical. There's some, maybe there's a little bit of dystopia in there. There's some fantastical sort of elements. But what inspired, you know, what inspired this series?
All right, yeah. So a lot of the series was, I was just trying to find sort of excuses to make different types of stories. So each one was, like, one's a nonlinear narrative. One has really interesting panel layouts. I had some other ones where my goal was just, I think the first one was just write a 24-page story, because it was, I try to simultaneously set like really low achievable goals and more difficult goals, so that way either way I feel like I accomplished something.
I was reading the one today about the guy in the wheelchair with the girl with all the tattoos, and she discovers he's got a sort of secret son who comes to live with them, and it takes some really interesting emotional beats there, I've got to tell you. It wasn't at all what I was expecting, but came across as very, very human. Nobody's perfect, and we all make mistakes and stuff like that. And really interesting stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
Where did that come from? That one.
Yeah. So, again, like, these are all, I do want to be clear, just so no one in my life feels like anything's weird's going on that they don't know about. None of these are autobiographical.
Book that tattoo appointment.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, I just want to make sure, just in case.
Well, that makes it more interesting though, because like a lot of these stories, they do feel like, and that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because it was like they all feel like deeply sort of almost autobiographical, but they're so different stories that they can't be. So I was thinking, what kind of mind can get into the minds and emotional beats of these other stories like that? You know, so. Yeah. How did it all come to be?
Yeah, so I have heard that from more than one person, which really surprised me, because I didn't think it would particularly come out like that. But yeah, I think part of it is a lot of them, they're slice of life, so there's no science fiction, like Batman doesn't show up, because I mean, it doesn't matter what tone you're going for. If Batman shows up, it's not going to feel autobiographical. Mm. He's got a really interesting life. Yeah, I think it also, a lot of it's about sort of how the characters go about problem solving, because it seems like generally, like, if you're trying to write an interesting fictional narrative, your protagonist sort of guides the story. They're the one who's acting and sort of moving the plot forward, whereas I think in a lot of the stuff I'm writing, it's more things have gotten to a point or stuff's happening and the protagonist sort of has to deal with it and maybe is more proactive or less proactive, but it's very reactionary in sort of how they're responding to the world around them. And a lot of the, I think some of these, a lot of the page legs, actually them avoiding dealing with problems that they eventually kind of will themselves into facing. And I think that that's a lot more how I think a lot of people problem solve in real life. And so it comes off as very autobiographical because of that.
Okay.
Yeah, they do. There's a certain sort of twist to the tale with a couple of them. I mean, certainly in my personal favourite, the Sun and the Air, you know, without spoil, we're not going to spoil anything, because we do recommend, all our listeners, there's all of these issues up on Comic House right now. And there's
it's a lot to read.
Seven very different stories from the Lost Time series on there. Citric Arc is also on there as well, but if you want, you know, shorter sort of one and done sort of stories, they're all on there. So I'm going to try not to spoil anything. But The Sun in the Air, that had a little sort of, it's both life affirming and sort of heartbreaking at the same sort of time. And, you know, it's an interesting character studies, which you seem to enjoy sort of delving into. You know, these characters that sort of live in your head for a little while before you put them down on paper.
Yeah, I actually, that's another thing, sort of how I write. I think a lot of people, and I'm sort of trying to work backwards to figure out how other people are doing things to figure out why my stuff is coming out differently. It seems that a lot of people think of characters and then they place them in the world, whereas I have a really hard time sort of formulating what my characters would even be like if they're not in a specific context. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I don't know. You see it whenever like people release a new series, they put a character bio, you know, name, basic like personality traits, and I'm like, well, what does that even mean? That what is their personality like when they're drifting in a void outside of space and time? It feels more like everyone's your personality, what you're doing. It's all sort of reactionary to the situation that you're in.
If you get a character bio, sometimes you get an awful lot of information about stuff that, when you read the story, isn't really that important and doesn't come into play at all. You know, especially if if your character gets killed off, or isn't, if these bits of information aren't really important to how they are within those pages of the book, are they needed? That's a general question, really.
I can understand that if you kind of like add in a load of stuff, like they got a real problem with a certain food type and then that never comes up, so why are you mentioning it? I don't know, perhaps you could always give your character a bit of flavor in kind of that kind of stuff, but I can understand what you mean. It's a bit like Chekhov's gun. If you're gonna
if you're gonna have a gun, it needs to be fired at some point. Or it needs to be used in some way.
Yeah.
If you flash to such and such in a TV series, you know, then there's a reason for it, isn't it? It's not real life. It's the structure of a fiction that you need to consider what's going on. Yeah, no, it's interesting, isn't it? That sort of thing.
And Lost Time definitely deals with a lot of pairings of characters or small groups of characters. It's usually like two people having an interaction. Was that always the plan? You know, or was that just, you know, how the whole series just ended up turning out?
Yeah, well, it wasn't specifically having pairings. It's more, I knew each of these stories was only going to be, their plan was 24 pages plus, you know, front cover and back cover. So I knew I wasn't going to have a ton of page space to flesh out, like, a lot of characters. And whoever's, because they're each different, you're introducing new characters every story. So the goal was definitely to keep the character number down. And that ended, and then because of that, you end up with a lot of, you know, person-on-person conversations. Because, I mean, you know, you introduce five characters in a 24-page story. Each character, either you focus on one or two, or a lot just don't get a lot of page time.
But with just having that focus, it really allowed you to explore, like, a lot of character beats, isn't it? Because, like we say, there are definite emotional beats that you do feel when you read these stories. You know, they sort of, you do get attached. I think it's a lot to be said when you can read a 24-page book and you get attached to a character. If you can do that in one issue,
you're doing good.
That's really good. You know, because sometimes you don't do it. I'm not attached to a character by the sixth or 12th issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually, yeah, that was one of the original reasons why back in, you know, 2013, I tried to stay away from science fiction, because I love science fiction, but a lot of the stuff I read, the characters kind of come across like hollow or interesting. Like the concepts and the world building is much more interesting than the characters. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure I could get really good at writing characters. So I thought, okay, we'll just remove any sort of fantastical elements unless they absolutely have to be there. Mm. And that was...
Is there going to be science fiction in the future, then? Is that what you're saying? You wanted to sharpen your skills with the characters before delving into this vast... You must have it. There's a science fiction world you must have in the back of your mind somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there is, and I want to get to it eventually, but yeah, I'm still not sure if that's something I'm ready to tackle yet. Mm. Probably at some point, yeah. I work fairly slow and sort of constructing things, so I don't want to make promises I can't keep at this point, but yeah, it's definitely always thinking about stuff.
Because you've got a day job, haven't you? So it's just a hobby in the evenings, I'm guessing, is it, in the weekends, or?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. This is a when I can find time to do it type thing. But yeah, no. This is what I like doing. So,
Do you run it by anyone? Do you have a sounding board that you show stories or even just talk story ideas through? Or?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, good on you. Quite right, too.
I think it goes back to that thing again of like a story by committee. You know, like kind of. I can understand, like, it's hard, say, if you like. Under stewardship from an editor, and they say, "Well, I want you to change X, Y, and Z about your story," and you think, "Well, no, that's fucking integral. I've got to have that in." But when you're kind of you're one man band, one woman band, and you're just creating your own story, you kind of live and die by that. So when like it really soars, like when a single creator's seen it through, it's fantastic. Mm. It's just pure their vision.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that a lot with was it Follow Me In? But
yeah, that's true.
Cat Diamond,
yeah.
That's fantastic.
I mean, bearing in mind that you say that comics takes time, how long was this in the works then? Because it seemed like you released 7 issues in a short space of time.
Yeah, so let's see. So I started working on this in 2015.
Right.
And it took, and then I released them all at once because I thought, well, I don't want to be rude, you know, don't want to leave people hanging if I release one, which actually wasn't necessary since they have nothing to do with each other, but you know, I wanted to wait and release them all at once they were all done. But I actually, it took a longer than I thought it actually would, because I had an injury to my hand about halfway through.
Oh no.
This, yeah. And so, okay, so they weren't made in the order that they were released. So it was actually, let's see, so I did the actual making order was the 5th issue, which is Simon, then the 2nd issue, which was the one you mentioned, wheelchair and tattoos.
Yeah.
Then the 4th, then the 4th issue, which was the sun in the air. Mm-hmm. And then let's see, and then it was, then I had the injury while I was writing Menagerie, and then let's see, and then it was the last issue, The People Downstairs, and then Star Opus, and then the first issue was the last one completed.
Wow.
So
hang on, you did Menagerie when you had the injured hand?
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Because that's probably my favorite, you know, we'll get into the art talk in a minute, but that's, blimey, that's impressive. That's what I've got to say. But that's quite interesting that you, like, I guess, like you say, because you haven't got a linear storyline, you could play about. What made you decide this track listing, should we say, for the order of the issues?
So because I was coming off of doing the Citric arc, I did Simon first just because the art style was, like, the most different, and I just wanted, like, a palette cleanser.
Right.
And then the rest of them was just how quickly I could finish sort of the bullet point outline of what I wanted to happen, because I don't really write scripts. I write like bullet point summary, and then when I do the panel layout, that's really the scripting process, I guess. And then after that, there's just finishing the art for it. And let's see, specifically, I wanted to do issue 4, so the Sun in the Air, right before doing Menagerie, because the panel layout in issue 4 was basically practice for doing issue 3, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because like Menagerie has some, I mean, some of the page layouts I talked about on the show. And yeah, you can see there's a bit of that in The Sun in the Air as well, isn't there? You know, you're constantly experimenting with page layout and, you know, telling a story. And I think Menagerie is the almost the biggest highlight of that. Because like the page layouts for that are just one-off piece. I mean, I could have any one of those pages as a print on my wall. You know, it's especially, I mean, how do you design pages like that without getting a nosebleed?
So I a couple of things I sort of thought through how I could maybe explain this. The main thing is, when you're looking at the page, you have to think of the margins as lines and the panels as like the space between the lines.
Right.
If that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, because I've looked at sort of other people's comic process, and it seems like they think of like the panels as pictures that like you're assembling on a like a board or something. Mm. But if you think of your margins as lines, it's like you're drawing a picture, and the margins are the lines, and the panels are just the negative space in between those.
Mm. Okay.
That's sort of the easiest way to sort of conceptualize it, because that really that breaks you out of the entire idea of using like a grid structure.
Right, so kind of flip it around. So instead of look at the panels, you're drawing the kind of the spaces between and then mm-hmm. filling them. Is that right?
Yeah. And actually, it was really easy for me to sort of make this leap, because when I work in Photoshop, essentially what I do is the margins are like a solid layer that's on top of all the other layers. So like if I'm having white margins, there's just a layer of all the white space that's actually on top of everything else. So it became really easy to sort of conceive of the idea of the margins actually being shapes and lines, as opposed to just being the negative space in between the panels.
So do you put all of it together digitally, the comic?
Yeah, most of my work's actually, I shouldn't say it's a mix. So yeah, everything's always assembled digitally at the end. So like for Menagerie, for example, the lines are its pen, but then I photograph it, put it in the computer, and then do all the any of like the coloring and shading is digital. But yeah, so the way I did it, I think for Menagerie, the margins, you could create them anyway. I actually did some stuff in just making like Illustrator shapes, or actually I know some like really basic programming for generating shapes. So that's how I did some of like the spirals and more complex panels. But yeah, you could do all of it in like Illustrator, or even if you wanted to break out like a compass and a protractor, you could probably do it all just hand on paper.
I mean, it would take you a while though. Ooh, some of these pages are quite intricate.
And you use little sort of reflections of, there's almost like little flowers in some of your work. I see sort of almost like hints of things as part of the pattern within the solid areas. Is that something you decided to do at some point?
Could you give what's a specific example of that?
All right, I'm going to have to go to it now, because I was looking at it earlier. Right, okay, give me a second. Which story? I think it was the first. Oh, I've got Open Comic House now. Yeah, sorry.
Do you mean in the in the first issue?
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There's almost little flowers in as part of the solids almost. You use, it's kind of like you're looking through a window at them or something like that almost. Is that?
So how I did that is, you could do it other ways, but I just used the mask tool in Photoshop, where you can take the blacks in one layer and use them as that's the only positive space in a different layer. Yeah, so that was the easiest way to do it. And the funny thing is, I'm always trying to push myself to explore new things, but that was the one thing where I was like, okay, I'm going to stop pushing right now, because issue 1 is already a very condensed, non-linear narrative. So I decided, okay, I'm just going to have the flowers in the negative space sort of symbolize stuff. But the idea was, it was going to be an entirely another art style, which is more of like the vector art. To show like abstract thoughts and dreams. But I figured, you know what? I feel like non-linear narrative plus side story of abstract images might be a little too much. So just simplify
I find there's a depth to the reading there, though, isn't there? I was looking at it thinking you've almost illustrated some of the sort of dead space using that style. There's an inevitable dead space in every panel, isn't there, really? You know, but you've used a sort of it's hard to describe. It's almost you're looking like through a stained glass window at your characters. It's almost a touch of that to me.
Which also ties into what the covers look like as well. There is, you know, even though the stories do have different flavors and they're very, very much different sort of characters and feels, you have almost a branding to the series, and each cover has this almost like stained glass sort of effect. What was your thinking behind that, to have the whole sort of set like that?
So the idea with the sort of, well, one was to give sort of the unifying feature to the issues, because the art style is so different. You want to have something that when you looked at it, that, you know, they're part of the same series. But also, yeah, it was the idea of sort of looking through glass at something, that you're seeing a small part of someone's life, maybe like looking through a pinhole. And the idea is that you're getting something out of it, but you sort of you're peeking in on something. And also, I do like challenging myself, and I wanted to figure out how I could sort of make this work, because on one side, you know, how to figure out how to assemble it in such a way that you can get a finished image, but also I had that set up first, and then I was actually doing the covers, and I had to figure out how to create the layout of the covers in a way that they actually looked good, because that was way more of a challenge than I thought it was going to be, because if you place, you know, something in the wrong point on the image, then it gets like half cut off because of how it's sort of these like fractured pieces of glass. You know, it's just a fun challenge that sort of had some nice symbolic meaning behind it. So
I mean, you are all about challenging yourself, most certainly. But I will say that you're absolutely spot on, like the snapshot of people's lives, because even when some of the books end, it doesn't, there's no finality to some of the stories. It does feel like, you know, you just stepped into someone's life for those 24 pages and things will continue afterwards. You know, it's definitely a, I mean, it's a selection of snapshot comics. The People Downstairs is a completely different kettle of fish. That's the one that completely sort of caught me completely off guard. And that's a darker, that's one of the darkest tales of them, I would imagine. It felt like to me, also in like art style and stuff. What was the story behind that one, and how did it fit in with everything else around it?
Well, yeah, so let's see. I really wanted to do a sort of unreliable narrator story, which you kind of get that in issue one, but not really. But this one, it's, you get someone's train of thought process as they're writing down what's happening afterwards. And then you're also seeing like them like crossing out and editing things that they don't want to write later.
Yes, I did notice that throughout the book. You know, it did catch me. I thought, you know, things are, it was very clearly intentional, though. You know, it's not like you're just reading a comic and you think, hang on, has the creator just scribbled this out because they got that wrong? There was a real, it really does make you think about what's being said, as well as everything else around it. And also, it was a bit creepy as well, the way the way the story went on. It was like, oh, this is unnerving.
Yeah, I think so. One of my thoughts with that was sort of how people sort of like to curate their own lives and sort of curate their opinion of themselves. So they, to a point, have their views. And I made the main character, I don't know if it comes across, he's okay, but he's a bit judgmental as a person. And then he gets to this point where he actually has to make a call or make a decision, and he's sort of, at least at this point, he's kind of kicking the can down the road, because he's really just erasing a lot of stuff that if he stuck to what he thinks about things, he should be including. And I'm trying not to spoil anything, but it comes off. And then also, part of the reason I wanted to end on a darker note is that again, setting up the whole series, I actually based the idea of, and it just as like a starting structure, didn't really stick to this, was that as you go along, the characters have more options, but that also means they have more responsibility. And sort of, so he's at supposed to be, and again, they all changed a bit from the starting point. It's supposed to be the idea of having like very clear values and responsibilities, and it's kind of shirking on them.
Mm.
But also, to a certain extent, he's just one guy, so he's not really in control of the situation either. And so, yeah, it does end on a kind of dark note, which I felt kind of bad about, but oh well.
I mean, why feel bad about it, though? You know, if that's the... I mean, unless you want to do another issue 8 and then release it. You could always do that with a series like this, but I'm guessing you had a plan for what these stories were, and they were always going to be these 7 issues, and you've told that sort of another arc, as it were, you know. So whatever comes next will be a completely different book for you, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right now I'm actually in the middle of a huge non-comics related project, which has pushed sort of everything else to the margins of my life. But yeah, just for fun, I've been doing a bunch of little one-page comics, and I think eventually, once I get enough of those, I'm going to release them. And okay, so that's just been nothing but fun for me, because each one I just get to do a different art style, experiment with different panel layouts. And
and doing a comic in one page is a challenge as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, we well know, Vince, because we're doing a bit of that at the moment. Is where you're sticking them out online? Are you putting them on your blog or something like that? Or
No, so right now I'm just collecting them. I guess I could. I mean, I could just post them on Twitter, because it is the kind of thing where they're each, you know, self-contained, so that wouldn't be hard. And then once I get maybe a collection together, put them on Comic House or something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. I mean, we find that putting stuff online doesn't really, strangely, affect the actual physical sales. We're finding that quite a lot, you know? You're almost building a customer base who then invest in it. A lot of them in a physical copy. It doesn't seem to sort of affect it, I think. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Oh, as a side note, pardon me for interrupting.
Yeah, I think if you kind of like, if you're doing stuff digitally and then you kind of like put it all together and then tweak a bit or add a bit extra that people haven't seen before, people want to support you if they enjoy your work, and they'll buy it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, and you certainly. I mean, even though say your comics take a while, or you know, you've already put out a lot more content than a lot of people who talk a good game already, and that I'm including me on that.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you get back into comics, is there, you're obviously doing these one-page comics, which is you're trying new stuff and experimental stuff. Is there another longer form story in the future that you're currently sort of making notes on occasionally? While you've got time?
Oh, yeah, I am. So that is where I'm considering doing another longer story. I think it's going to be kind of like the Citric arc, except broken into, so it'll be like that, the shorter stories that are all kind of intertwined, but probably broken into like 4 issues with maybe about 40 pages each. And I finally settled on like a sort of core art style that I want to use for that. So maybe in the next couple, if quarantine lasts another few months, I might actually have some free time.
Think of all the brilliant comics we're going to have. Marvelous comics.
I mean, experimentation seems to be very important to you with your work. Is it all about like challenging yourself and learning new things?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Just partly because, I mean, I like the idea that other people care about what I'm doing, but really it's about entertaining myself during the process of making things.
Right,
so
too.
Can't just keep doing the same thing over and over.
Some people do. Well, yeah. I mean, we've been doing this for 240 odd episodes, and it still hasn't got any better.
Our production value's got slightly better.
By that you mean I've got to edit more.
Siri.
We bought a new mic, so that's about it.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right, though, and it's something we talk about a lot there, Jen, is you've got to do it for yourself, mate. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And if you're not, it's going to come across that way. People are going to smell that, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. How do you feel about, like, once your work's done, how do you feel about the next stage of it, you know, that I hate to use the word term marketing.
It's important these days.
But it is, isn't it? Yeah. You know, making the comic can sometimes only be 25% of the job sometimes. Then, you know, how do you feel about that stage of it from where you are?
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, the marketing was a thing I was completely unprepared for, certainly going into it the first time. Mm. Yeah, my marketing generally consists of putting sample pages on Twitter and just hoping people like it. And then, I have a lot of things where I have like a Discord server that I join where I talk to other people who are also making comics. And yeah, mostly my comic marketing is a series of just making friends.
Isn't that great? I kind of like that though. Do you know what I mean? We're always suspicious. Maybe it's slightly different in America. I hate to think that it is. Yeah, but I'm always suspicious of people who do a hard sell. You know, I prefer the way we seem to do it. You know, if people like us, they'll look at our books, and if they like their books, they'll buy them. You know, it's kind of how it works almost. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you found like the actual sort of the social media community and stuff have been quite a positive sort of aspect of your books, your work, shall we say?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. In terms of social media, I've had, a good time. I don't know what was going on, like, in sort of the broader comics Twitter community, because, I mean, when I first got on, like, 2017, it seemed like constant fires just everywhere. Yeah. But, yeah, in terms of sort of...
Yeah, you ain't wrong.
Yeah, in terms of just like talking to, individual people, I don't know, it just all seems really positive and people who are just excited about making comics. So
I think there's a lot to say. I mean, we iconify people who, whenever I see your little Twitter icon pop up, I think, oh, that's nice. She's like that. Or, there's a bit of that going as well.
Yeah.
Just that is quite a supportive nature, isn't it? Quite a supportive atmosphere, I think. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. You're always, in some ways, aware, even though people go, oh, it's not about the likes or the retweets or whatever. I think everyone is aware, though, aren't they? If like, someone retweets something and you're like, oh, they've retweeted it. That's quite nice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it doesn't take much, doesn't it? What's that? Yeah. A friend of mine is proud of saying occasionally, look, the retweet button is just next to that like button.
Yeah.
Move over slightly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, although sometimes if you go to someone's profile, it's just like a whole page of retweets. It's like, oh.
Yeah. Say something for yourself, for God's sake. Yeah.
We've both been positive and negative about the whole thing in the past 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's a strange beast.
Life.
Yeah, it's true. But we're very glad that more comics are in the future. And looking forward to seeing, what you'll be putting out. And,
You're very productive, if you don't mind me saying, as a guest. Bear in mind, you only kind of started in, is it 2015 you said a second ago?
So the comics class that I first took was in 2013, and then in 2015 was when I started Lost Time,
Right, that's amazing. I'm really impressed.
Good stuff.
Did you have, I guess you had like the prerequisite art skills before you did that? I'm hoping you're going to say yes.
Yeah, I've been drawn since I was like five. Yeah.
So I thought you were just taking a comic art course and suddenly become out like a comic art beast.
don't ever take up creating weapons or nuclear fission. Because, very trouble.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
But so why did he...
Go on,
B. Why did you feel like you needed the comic arts course thing? Had you sort of dabbled before then, or...?
No, well, it was actually, I just needed a class for credits, and I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds really cool, I'm gonna take this, and yeah, it was really fun. I think I'd made, like, some comics when I was, like, 9 years old or something for some school project, but yeah, since then, I'd never really tried it again, but yeah, just actually trying it out, I actually really enjoyed it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And it's a great American art form. That and baseball. You invented both those things. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, once you start with comics, that's it then, isn't it? As soon as you start making comics, you rarely leave. It's harder and harder to make money from it these days, but people still
hang on a minute, make money. What's that all about?
Yeah, I know. Just treat it like we're all like musicians. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Only the lucky few will get a gold disc.
So not as cool.
No, No. We're like the Motley Crue of comics on this.
Oh, my God.
Why? What do you think we are?
I'm more like the Kenny Rogers. Oh, no, he died, didn't he?
Well, more like Kenny Loggins. Anyone out there will probably sing a Kenny Loggins song.
Right, Log right. Jamming.
No, that's a completely different thing. Although somehow appropriate.
Anyway. I should watch that on this week's what films I'm where.
Oh, what films Dan's watching? Yeah, we like that little.
Yeah. As well as the occasional video clip of you reenacting Godzilla with your cat.
One of the cats.
Dan is a cat lady.
I sent that to amuse my wife, and she instantly posted it on social media.
Your wife's a legend. That's because your wife's a legend. That's why.
Your wife literally trolls you the whole time.
It's amazing. But we briefly spoke about it before we started recording. But and obviously the name has popped up a few times. But I discovered Jen's work through Comic House, and I know we've talked about many of the UK scene and a lot of like the indie creators that are on there, but I think this is the first time we've had an American creator with work on Comic House directly. So how did you discover it? And, like, you know, how has the experience been on Comic House since you joined?
Yeah, so let's see. I think I discovered Comic House back in 2018 because I was looking for other places to put comics on besides Comixology for digital distribution. Mm. And essentially, I really like it. I like the app format, and frankly, I know that there's been some like recent problems with Comixology, but even if there weren't, it's just a really bad idea to have sort of one platform have a monopoly on distribution in that way. So I certainly think that, you know, any sort of competitive or smaller platform should really be encouraged. And
did we learn nothing from Diamond? I think people forget that, don't they? They think the monopoly that Diamond has with comics is kind of where Comixology almost sits now. Yeah, you're completely right. Yeah, and who knows what can happen in the future, especially with the financial crisis we're about to hit the wave of. You know, what will happen to these people? And like you said, Dan, before, we're just leasing these comics off people.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting. We talked about the digital thing of Comixology, and then, like, we've hit this period where everyone's getting them digitally.
Yeah, because we've got an alternative.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And obviously, you started with the Citric arc. You just had that one book on there, wasn't it? With the intention of adding Lost Time eventually to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the plan. I originally put the Citric arc on to see how it would go. Because the intention was eventually, because I knew I was finally finishing up Lost Time. So that was the idea the whole time. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's quite wise to sort of, if you've got a book, certainly like the Citric arc, which isn't like a 15-page. Sure, it's a larger book. You know, test it out on these platforms. You know, don't necessarily throw all of your eggs into one basket, no matter what platform it is. You know, give it a try, give it a test. And because of that, now all of your work can be found on Comic House as well as these other wonderful digital platforms. I mean, what other sort of platforms are your work on at the moment?
Yeah, so right now it's on Comic House, Comixology, and I also have a Gumroad account. I used to have it on Comic Central, but sadly they didn't have enough funds coming in, so they had to close shop. So they no longer sell comics, but they're switching over to like a news and comics platform. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is really hard to find places that put out comics online that have any sort of, you know, staying power.
Mm. Yeah, which is why it's important to support all the ones that you do and tell people.
Absolutely,
about them.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So what about, I mean, Gumroad as well. That's one that I see more and more and more and more, and certainly I'm using a lot more because certainly you can, with Gumroad, a lot of them you can pay what you want with certain Gumroads, isn't it? How does that, you know, for someone like me who hasn't used it and maybe wants to put their books on there, how easy is that to go, you know, how do you set up a Gumroad?
It's really easy to set up. I think it took me like maybe an hour to create the whole thing and put everything online. I think the main thing is that it seems like through Gumroad, you're not going to get a lot of visibility just because the way they organize things on their site, there's like one category for comics, which is for like all comics. So it's very hard to search through. So you probably, if you are selling through Gumroad, you probably have to do the advertising yourself and then like create the Gumroad and then promote it through your own social media. But as far as like rates and terms, they seem pretty fair. But yeah, they, as far as I can tell, the way that they're selling it on their site, it's very difficult to find specific things unless you're looking for them.
Nice. But I do see, like, a lot of creators do post their link on their Twitter bio, you know, yeah, more and more, rather than like a website as well. Sometimes it's not a website, it's just a Gumroad link that people post. So that's interesting, because I think I might use that for some stuff going forward. So I love stealing information from people. But where can people find, like, more of your work, as well as, like, Comic House, Comixology, or whatever? Do you have a website yourself?
I do have a website. It's not, let's see, I think it's pretty much just links back to my Twitter and stuff. But yeah, like, if you want to see some nice CSS, if you're into that, oh, go to my website.
There's a lot of people listening are like, now she's talking.
Even I know what that is.
Yeah, no, it's like how each of my comics are an experiment in different, trying to learn new techniques. The website, it's just an experiment in learning like CSS and some basic JavaScript. So,
well, you know, people don't get better, or, you know, new things aren't discovered if people don't experiment. That's how we found Dan. So no, but that's awesome, and thank you for it's really interesting getting a bit more insight into your work. You know, I feel like I could talk about some of the artwork on the pages for days. But you've already, you know, we don't want to kill your cactuses off.
It's also great. We've got that little link now with America. There's a few creators on there. It's good stuff.
Yep. So, you know, as we say, definitely check out Jen's work wherever you can find it. So go forth and read it. She's going to stick with us for the rest of the show. God bless her. Because this is the part of the show where we don't know how it's going to go from now on. It's, you know, the wheels are off. But before we get on to the fantastic recommendation section, of which there'll be lots of interesting stuff to work about this week, I think.
Yeah.
Do we have any shout-outs, etc.?
I've got a little bit of an announcement.
Oh,
go on. Go for it.
So me and the mighty Adam Phelps, Outlaw Adam Phelps, have decided, as we are locals, we live near each other, and we meet up most weeks now. Mm. So we've decided to form a little small press indie thing, and we're going to be Tribute Press. So head over to tribute-press.com and you'll see a taste of what we got planned. We've got obviously the second issue of Atomic Hercules. That's out any day now. Finished any day now, and we'll probably go on Kickstarter once that all sort of settles down. And we've got probably at least three projects that are either halfway or almost done that we're going to be launching. We decided we want to aim a bit towards the underground outlaw area of comics, which isn't overly covered in this country, we feel, and it's something we're both passionate about.
And you've certainly gone there with the first Atomic Hercules.
Such a great read, it really cheered me up, I really needed it.
That was the idea. We didn't want to be serious, we wanted to be a bit transgressive and wanted people to have a laugh at it. So please follow us, Tribute Press, on Twitter, or go to facebook.com/Tribute Press, and we're on there as well. But we're all about having a fun, all about being a bit underground, a bit indie, a bit DIY. It's only a little bit saucy, a little bit violent in places, but just experimental is what we wanted to do. And Adam's certainly a guy who knows how to put a comic book out. And him and I are having an absolute blast putting our comics out. So we decided to sort of formalise our relationship, as it were, in a certain way. And we've got Tribute Press on the go. So have a look at that. And please follow us, because there's some great stuff coming up soon.
Nice.
And there's even a story that if you back the Kickstarter for Atomic Hercules, there's a story about how he and I met on the bus.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
With that sort of thing, does that mean future projects of yours might be released through that? Should we say?
Tony Osmond is a movie star, is going to be coming out from that, and that we're on the last page of that before it goes off for lettering. So, in fact, the cover we're on at the moment. Yeah. So that'll be done. Obviously, Atomic Hercules 2. We've got a announcement around Atomic Hercules, and we've got an announcement now around another story that Adam's working on in the same line coming up very soon. It's all very exciting. Yeah, we had a bit of a planning meeting over lunch today, and it's good stuff. I'm very excited.
You're gonna have a Netflix series, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah. Wow.
You'll probably need a special subscription to watch that.
I think we'll probably just go straight to Pornhub for that one.
Oh god.
Jesus.
What can you say?
Yeah, and have you read Atomic Hercules? If not, I will be sending it to you in a minute.
There's something to look forward to.
Yeah. Please, Jen, don't think any less of me when you read it, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
She's going to.
That's definitely not self autobiographical.
No, that's definitely. I mean, if it is autobiographical, I mean, the life we Tony's lived.
Yeah. Hang on a minute, Brian.
Oh, my word. What other shout outs have we got?
If you've got a comic and you stop selling it, and or if you just want to be a good geezer or a good person, then go over to Awesome Comics Talk and post. There's a strand on there of free comics for people to read while they'll hold up in their houses. Yep. Also go to @SparkFace, SPARKE face on Twitter, yes. And you'll find there's a link to a Captain Fishbeard drawing game for bored kids, which is a great idea from Tom.
Yeah.
Past guest Tom. He's just literally just before we come on air, he messaged me or messaged us to say can we give it a shout, and I've had a look at it. It's good stuff. Go over there, and it's like a little, it'll keep your kids shut up for an hour, which is always good.
Excellent. Yeah.
That's that one. And then also, if you go to Awesome Comics Talk, there's a comic house reading club organized by Ian and Nikki from the Lakes. And they've chosen a book off Comic House. There's a couple of free subscriptions going on there for like an extension of, as we talked about earlier, an extension of the of your reading time on Comic House due to the current situation. Mm-hmm. And go over there and then post your opinions, your thoughts on it. Everyone will be, I'm sure, very sensible on the strand, and we'll put it all together, and I'm sure Ian will be talking about it on the Lakes Pod at some point. But yeah, it's a good little idea. Something awesome. It's all occupied. There you go.
Nice.
I was going to give a shout out to Tom's review of Vanguard on the Lakes podcast. That was absolutely fantastic. He gave me some great feedback about one of the Scottish characters I wrote, and saying it's a bit wonky. I don't know how you describe it, but not quite right. So I'm going to go to him for some editorial guidance when I write that character's dialogue in future. And shout out for Tom and Tony popping up on the Nerds Who Haunted Us.
Oh, podcast, yeah, we had a bit of a
the review special.
Yeah. It's about talking about reviews and how we should approach them, and yeah, the changes that have happened. Yeah, it was good fun. And it gets a little bit raucous, to be fair, but then you're used to that, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's great, that thing about reviews. Like, if you can get a kernel of truth or information out of it that can improve your work, it's worth it. You mentioned about negative reviews, and it made me jump back way back in time when we put out that Comic House 1, and there was like some guy who just basically ripped on it and didn't do anything but just ripped on it and was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
And so there's no real need for it. It's just stupid. Yeah.
And then also, alternatively, I think, and you put me right on this, Dan, is that if you just want nice comments about your comic, give it to your gran.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just if you want critical feedback, that's what should answer reviews about.
Yeah.
You're right, exactly. There. It has become a kind of, not shill media, but like.
Yes, it's seen as a promotional tool now. Review.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be. It should be. You should hold your breath. Because you can't see the wood for the trees when you're creating a comic, and you sometimes need that feedback. Speaking of which, Honest Comics Review Month has started over at Never Mind Anything. If you've got a comic you want reviewing and you want reviewing honestly, and I don't do hit pieces and I don't do fluff pieces, I just will be honest and what are my thoughts on the comic, then please send them over to me.
But he does communicate, so if you send something and he says something, like, communicate and discuss.
Yeah. I got sent one that's going up tomorrow, and the intro page is like a text piece. When you open it, you can't read it because it's all, and then they forget about stuff, don't they, when they put it out to print sometimes, and they think, oh, yeah, it'll be all right. And no, the honest opinion is you can't actually read that text, so, you know, you need to be told stuff like that.
You can't zoom in with a real-life comic, can you?
No, so. I try and tap on reality to get it, or I try and push it away, you know, glide it away, the whole of reality, but it never works when you double-tap on it, does it?
Yeah. Double-tap on reality, there's a T-shirt.
I would really consider, like, if you've got a title, to send it in to Tony if you want some feedback, but...
And for I don't necessarily have to print them. I will give you what I think. Do you know what I mean? I've done that for a few. Well, they said, I don't really want. Would you mind not doing a published one? I said, well, no, fine. But you know, if you're prepared to get some honest feedback.
Very similar to like when going back to like learning art and design, like in university, the kind of crits you'd get that were kind of, they'll break it down, but they'll tell you what's good and what didn't work.
Yeah,
which is what you want to hear, not just it's fucking great.
And you'll move on and you'll learn. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. There you go.
Nice.
Boom.
Jen, do you have anyone you'd like to shout out?
Yeah, in terms of comics, or just are we doing general shout outs?
Just general shout outs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think I already mentioned them, but yeah, Ash Avenue Comics, which is my local place. I'm just very worried about them right now, and I'm hoping they're staying afloat, just like all the other businesses around here. So,
yeah.
If you happen to be in the area, go buy your comics there. They're also apparently they're now doing like curbside drop off, and they're now shipping to people and stuff. Yeah, and like I said, if you go in, they'll give you hand sanitizer. So
nice.
Yeah.
So definitely, definitely support them. And yes, now it's that time of the show where we recommend some stuff. We've got a few things. So let's have our guest kick us off.
Yes, indeed.
What would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
Oh, me?
Yeah,
go on.
Okay. So I want to recommend, trying to find other Arizona people to promote. Dave Baker and Ryan Quackenbush created a book called Vicky the Wonderful.
Hang on, rewind, Jen. Did you say Quackenbush?
Yes.
You may have the best name ever.
Yes.
That's a great name.
That's actually part of why I'm recommending this. It is the last name I've heard, at least for a very long time. And they create a book called Vicky the Wonderful. And it is, so on the first page, they have a disclaimer about how it's a work of fiction, which should tell you everything you need to know about how it is sort of loosely based on events that may or may not have happened to somebody. And so essentially it's about the sort of the behind the scenes creation of a doll in, let's see, what looks to be about the 1950s or 60s. And the controversy is that it's one of the first dolls to not have, let's say, the sort of floppy cotton filled bodies. It's the plastic posable bodies. So which kind of maybe lets you know what doll it's actually loosely based on, which is why they have the disclaimer not letting you know who it is. The art style is amazing. Let's see. I should send you guys some of the example pages. But yeah, it's this mix of, it looks like possibly collage, but with some like digital effects as well. I'm not sure if they're just maybe brightening the colors digitally after creating, maybe like it's like a mix of maybe like charcoal and crayon and paint, along with like textured paper. And so the art and like actually like some like pasted images. So I'm like, the art is like such a treat. And so I actually was able to contact Quackenbush again. Great name. Yeah.
He better be a doctor or a professor or something like that.
Yeah.
Dr. Quackenbush. Amazing.
Yeah, about availability. And so right now their plan was they were going to be selling at conventions in the US, but obviously I think a lot of that's been put on hold for them.
Yeah.
But it is currently available through Dave Baker's website, which it's $15 US plus shipping. So I don't know how much that would cost to get to the UK, but it's a really fabulous book, and I'm hoping that they will do maybe a digital release or a wider release in the future.
I'm on the website now, which is heydavebaker.com. And there are some, the artwork's beautiful, isn't it? And definitely, I love the colours, the sort of palette that they use. It looks really interesting, actually. So yes, we'll put a link in the show notes for that one. I'll put that on my wish list.
Right. Ideal.
Yeah.
Nice.
Any others?
I do have several others. I don't know how long you guys, like, how much time do we have? Because I can just keep going.
Long as you want, mate. Just another one. Go on.
Yeah.
Let's go another one. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, yeah, another book I picked up recently, it's a Fantagraphics book, Special Exits by Joyce Farmer. And I do think this is one of the books that it's fictional, but I do think it's, like, autobiographical based on true events, based on sort of the contents and the acknowledgments page. And it's about sort of a character sort of watching her father and her stepmother in their last sort of years and months of life. And it's about like aging and like eventually dying, which it's sad, but it's also a part of life. And also especially it had me like rereading this and like being teary eyed at the thought of my parents still going outside during the coronavirus outbreak. Okay. So but it's really brilliant. It's a great read, and especially if you just feel like looking at some nice art, getting a really in-depth story and being sad but also happy, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that looks nice. We're looking at it.
Well, I love Fantagraphics.
Yeah.
Love Fantagraphics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do some great books. Right. So what? If you've got another one, what we might do is we might circle back round to Jen.
Let's do that.
We haven't done that before.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Right, who wants to go next? Dan?
I got one I ordered in. I've heard a lot about it, but I'd buy it. It's Sex Criminals, Volume 1.
Okay.
You guys read this?
Yeah, I've read this. Yeah.
I was really enjoying it up to a point, and then I was kind of like, I'm not too kind of bothered about this. But people have to tell me, what's it like after Volume 1? Because I know it goes up.
It stays a bit. I've only read the first two, and I got a bit. I'll be honest with you, I got a bit bored with it. I actually thought when I saw the grand title of Sex Criminals, I'm because I'm a child of the 70s. I just thought it would be something a little bit more psychedelic, but that's a very literal title, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, people who commit crimes because they stop time when they ejaculate.
Yeah. There's a guy and a girl, and they're basically the most interesting part. They tell us a story about how they grow up and how they find out about their powers, and they all the way through their life, like they have sexual partners, and when they orgasm, time freezes, and when they first get together, they realize they've both got this power, and then they sort of turn to crime. But then, like a kind of like it seems like a police force of sorts, dressed in costumes, kind of come along, and I was kind of like, as soon as that started happening, I was like, I'm not sure about this anymore. I quite like the concept of it.
Yeah, I did. I quite liked it. It's just it isn't. That sort of stopped time world is occupied by other people, and it removed a bit of the sort of special about it for me at that
point. It's kind of like
always the setup was quite interesting, but how do you move beyond the setup?
Yeah, it's a good idea, but when it was sort of Sex Criminals, I thought it's going to be this sort of galactic, do you know what I mean, like psychedelic, we're doing loads of LSD and having sex, and you know, it's like a bit like my sort of late teens, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I enjoyed it well enough, but just not enough to say I want to read any more of this. I was like, oh, that's enough for me. And but if you've read more and you've really enjoyed afterwards, please let me know and see if it's worth a punt. Tony says to bother.
I actually find Chip Zdarsky a better writer than I do an artist, which is a shame. I do really like his writing, I would say. Yeah, it's a little bit, so he's a bit like a more basic Steve Lieber to me. I know you're a fan of Steve Lieber.
Yeah, I know. I do know what you mean. I can see what you mean there.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
Shall I go next because mine is related?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
So, because we had an American guest on,
I just realised why it's related.
Because we had an American guest on, God bless your lovely country, Jen. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of America.
Well, somebody has to be.
I decided that there was a comic called Female Force, Stormy Daniels, for
sounds great.
Good. I'm glad you're invested. I'm glad. The it's written by Michael L. Frizzell and written by Joe Paradis, who also does the art, and we'll talk about him in a minute. Yeah. It's edited by, get this, Stormy Daniels, Darren G. David, and Michael L. Frizzell. And Stormy actually writes the intro. Very very lucidly and very interestingly. It's produced by Tidal World. Now we will get onto this because this is unusual for this company that the person they're basing the comic on is actually involved.
Because I was going to wonder about this, because people who don't know this Female Force, which is something I used to see a lot in previews and stuff like that, wouldn't you? They'd be like, it's basically a comic that's a biographic sort of telling of this person's life, isn't it? It's a famous.
So stand by, because I wrote a little list of people you may be interested in. Been in the series Female Force. So first off, it's created by Tidal Wave Productions, who used to be Blue Water Comics, who have kind of sidelined, or they sort of mainstreamed comics trash, really. God bless them. And then I put in a review today that I think there's room for comics trash. I kind of like that there is. They were used to be known as Stormfront Publishing, and they actually started at Image before they kind of went bankrupt, and did books like The Tenth Muse, which people might know.
Them. God, I never read it. I never read it.
Early 2000s. This comic, however, this will put you off, is $3.99 to buy digitally, which is an absolutely, utterly large waste of your money.
Yeah,
do buy it at that price. You'll probably, if you're lucky enough, like, you know, to find it in a dollar bin.
Tony bought this purely out of just
as a just for a laugh to cheer you guys up. Yeah. And we were having Jen on, and how much of a fan she's probably of Stormy Daniels. So other people they have done comics about within this Female Force series: Elizabeth Warren, Sarah Palin. You're a big Palin fan, aren't you, Jen? I can tell.
Absolutely. What's she doing anyway? I saw her. What, was she singing "Baby Got Back" recently?
Oh God!
Did you guys see that?
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
there's some other cracking names. Oprah. She had a comic about her. Completely unauthorized, I'm guessing. Margaret Thatcher had a comic about her, if you can believe it. Princess Di, J.K. Rowling, Madonna, Ayn Rand, and the Queen. All their comics as part of the Female Force.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a Justice League International, isn't it, lineup? Yeah. That is. I mean,
that's not even a tenth of the people that have comics about them in this series. And there's more to come in a second. All I'm suspecting are completely unauthorized, apart from the one about Stormy Daniels. Tidal Wave have got something of a diverse variety of books, I'm going to say. they do put out quite a fuckload of product. They did a series of Fame, which focused on slightly awful adaptions of famous people. Yeah. And mostly people were sort of considered to be vaguely hot at the time of the comic coming out. So you had an Adele book, a Nick Jonas. Who's Nick Jonas? Is he? That's
brothers,
a singer.
One of the Jonas Brothers.
Brothers, yeah. David Beckham. I bet that's a cracking comic.
Yeah.
Demi Lovato. I don't know who that is. And somebody called Taylor Lautner. I don't know. Does he shake? I don't know who he is.
He was in the Twilight films.
Yeah, he's the wolf from the. Yeah. He was also Shark Boy, I think. Lava Girl, yeah.
I fucking hate that film.
He's the wolf in the Twilight movies.
Yes.
I have to say the cover looks absolutely nothing like him. So I have actually seen one of the Twilight movies, much to my chagrin. So they're kind of. Do you remember when we did the awful 90s comics episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
Me and Mr. Harrower, the Mighty Harrower, talked about rock and roll comics. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
They're kind of the spiritual continuers of that vile tradition of terrible cash-in comics, which I looked into it a bit today, and it turns out that they actually bought some of their product, put it out from Rock and Roll Comics. Do you remember the owner of Rock and Roll Comics got murdered suspiciously many years ago? But whoever holds the license, they bought it, put it out. Then they got into some sort of strange legal dispute with them over the licensing of that. It's all a bit of a mess. So pretty awful in the whole, but this is actually all right. I'm going to say there's actually quite a good comic fighting to get out here. It's not a straight biography. I mean, essentially, it's kind of an autobiography when you look at the fact that Stormy is involved in it. Yeah. It's got some comedy moments. It does focus a little bit in on Stormy's origin story, how she grew up and how she became a stripper. But it's not sort of, there's no sort of sexual, well, it's kind of, there's a lot of sexual moments talked about, and there's a couple of sort of underwear shots and stuff like that. And there's a couple of bits where she's clearly doing something in a porn film, but the hardcore elements of it are sort of out of panel, stuff like that. But what it does focus in, on how she met the President of the United States, Mr. Trump, and what happened after that. But it's done with a sort of Don Martin Mad Magazine feel. Anyone know sort of Don Martin or Dave Burgess? You know, someone like that from Mad Magazine, who's got that sort of really sort of satirical, it's not the Beano, but it's more adult satire. You could almost see it as a sort of Sunday newspaper comedy panel kind of joke thing. It's sort of fun. The art sort of is fun. It's sort of slightly bouncy, not in that way, and has a sort of genuine personality to it. So Stormy is playing golf at this charity golf event, and she bumps into Trump, who convinces her that she should come up to see him at his hotel room, as you do, obviously. I have to say, it's slightly naive. There's a line of believability, so I will believe that these allegations can be true against Mr. Trump, but I can't possibly find it in myself to believe that Stormy is so naive, you know.
Yeah, I'll just come up and see him in my yeah, hotel room.
I mean, I've done extensive research into the back catalogue of videos that she's made
for the purposes of this review.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, she does go there. I mean, to be fair, someone I heard an interview. I was listening to a podcast interview with a CNN news reporter today, and he was saying Trump was scared of two people in the world. One was Stormy Daniels, and the other one is Vladimir Putin. Which kind of she clearly has got that. You know, she's just in charge of him. So Stormy ends up going up to his hotel suite, and he's sitting there in his monographed pajamas. We all do that, right, don't we? I'm sitting in my monographed pajamas at the moment. She goes to the toilet, and she comes out the toilet to find him waiting for her in naked in bed. And they avoid, you know, that allegation. Let's not repeat it on the show because they don't repeat it in the comic. I don't think we're quite as bravely fighting back against the litigious nature of American politics on this show. But there is an allegation that something might have been done in someone's face. And they also swerve that in the comic, interestingly. And all it has is her with this sort of look of surprise in her, on her sort of cartoon face, saying, "You want me to do what in your face?"
Been to the toilet.
Yeah, I've just been.
Give me half an hour, Sam. Got to drink.
She's strayed into mainstream, Stormy. She's done a movie called Camp Cuddly Pines Power Tool Massacre, which I want to see now. it's
what kind of power tools?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, once you start going down this fucking road, it's damned.
It's actually not a bad comic. It actually reads well. It's drawn well. The only problem is it's $3.99, and the comic part of it is only like 10 pages long. Rest is like filler with there's pin-ups, and there's a couple of text pieces, which I think they've got Stormy herself to write on occasion. And it kind of fills it in with bits like that. It's almost like someone got a bit bored, or they had to rush it out.
For $3.99, man.
I know, man.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Plus, series of comics, they don't put any effort into the covers either.
No, this one they don't. There's actually two versions. This one is like someone's just traced over a photograph.
It looked like a trace.
Yeah. There's another one that's sort of, there's two versions of it. There's one that's sort of slightly more, it looks like a Powder Puff Girls kind of, do you know, it's a bit like, there's a bit of that on it. Sort of.
I was, when you posted a review up of this, I was surprised, one, at the artwork in the interior. I expected it to be more kind of, you remember the old strips in Looking? They're a bit more kind of like realistic looking,
or some
kind of harsh black and white
photographs.
Exactly, yeah.
But then
the review said you weren't too bad. I was sort of hit with the 1-2 punch. I was like, okay.
I mean, it's right, like clearly just done to get money, you know. Yeah. Let's be honest. And cynical old me thinks that, and also far too short for the price and far too expensive. But it's not. It's not as lascivious. It's not as salacious as I thought it would be. It's actually there's a you know, if this was much, much longer, I would quite happily read a trade paperback of this, you know. Especially in this style, I kind of liked it. So like I say, somewhere in there is a good comic waiting to come out, waiting to jump out of us, and maybe they'll finish it one day. I had a look into some of the other comics that you might enjoy out of Tidal Wave Productions. There's Sinbad Goes to Mars. How good does that sound? War of the Elementals.
Great.
Logan's Run Aftermath. Yeah. Plan 9 from Outer Space Strikes Again. That's going to be genius, isn't it?
Yes.
There's a Leprechaun. The Death Sport Games. Why is it Death Sport Games? What's that? and probably the best title of the lot is Dirk Benedict in the 25th Century.
That's fucking great.
So wait until you find it in a bargain bin at the comic convention, a comic mart, and buy Female Force by Stormy Daniels.
There's a recommend for the future.
There you go.
Yeah.
My word. Okay. My recommend this week is a trio of books. Now I bought a set of four, but I've read the first three. I haven't read the fourth yet. By a creator that I met at True Believers, spoke to at True Believers, Sarah Gordon.
Oh, yeah. No, I like her stuff. Yeah.
This is the first time I've been meaning to get hold of some of her books for a while now, and I managed to get a set, which is a collection of short, dark comics entitled Vicious Creatures, which has the titles The Salisbury Owl, Good Fortune, Bright Young Things, and Queen Rat. All of which have a lovely sort of
folk-tale-y.
Yeah, they're all folk-tale-y. Each one has the cover of each. They're all black and white, but the cover of each one is nice, stark colour. So, you know, there's a blue cover, there's an orange cover, there's a red cover, there's a green cover. So as a set, it just looks really nice. But yeah, these are just great books. Each one a different tale. Like I say, a sort of a macabre, sometimes supernatural. There's always strange things going on. Folk horror in the truest kind of sense. There's more and more sort of folk horror. It seems to have a real resurgence over the last.
Yeah, it does at the moment.
Years.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it actually. Yeah. I like all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's really good. And these are just great examples of that as well. For instance, with Queen Rat, it's about a young scientist who encounters something nasty beneath the streets of Victorian London. That one was written and drawn by Sarah as a 48-hour comics challenge during the summer of 2016, which is quite interesting. I'm not sure whether that's the first one that kicked off this whole set. My two sort of personal favourites are Bright Young Things and Good Fortune.
Okay.
Now, Good Fortune is about a young woman and her dog who have their fates altered forever when they meet a strange lady deep in the forest. All of these are short, sort of short, sharp tales. They're like 20-odd pages or so, 20-plus pages, something like that. Very nicely printed. The artwork's... There's a perfect mesh of storytelling, theme, and artwork, I think, with Sarah's work, you know. It's always nice when you're reading... Like, if you're going to do a folk horror, you know, you're not going to get a sort of... like a Chris Imber to draw it. It'd be interesting to see, but that's not necessarily the sort of flavour you want. Sarah's work is perfect for this. That it's a real creepy story of the characters in these stories. They're not necessarily black and white, sort of good and evil. You know, normally there's some real rotters. That's a word that's not used enough, is it?
Yeah.
you know,
or a Terry Thomas.
Those classic, those classic sort of Dickensian sort of, like, you know, people that are just not very nice people, and through hook or by crook, by the end of the story, they end up, I don't know, there's a poetic sort of ending to a lot of these stories. And poetic is the best way to describe these books. I mean, Bright Young Things is literally about, like, someone who travels to an old house that seemed to be, like, partly burnt down, and he sort of meets someone there. And basically more than they expected. It's sort of a ghostly sort of tale in the best kind of way.
Yeah.
It's got a wonderful sting in its tail, but it's a beautiful artwork in that one as well. Like, the first page would be a lovely print, and it immediately sets the tone and the theme and the atmosphere. And the dialogue, I mean, the narration says, Not so very long ago, there was a young man burning with curiosity for life and an unfortunate desire to explore it. And that's the first page, and immediately I was like, oh, I like the language of this tale. It immediately says there's a lot to be said for the language of a narrative, and certainly, like, there's some wonderful panels of, like, when the guy gets to this abandoned house. I don't want to spoil anything, because like all of these sort of short tales, I really loved the way it ended, and I really I'd like to describe the last couple of pages to you, but I can't without major spoilers. But Sarah's work is absolutely fantastic. There's a real dark humour running throughout. Have you read some of her stuff before, Tony?
I have, yeah. I bought some of her stuff online about a year ago, I think, something like that. Yeah. I really like stuff, yeah. I know that Cliff's done an incumbent about her, isn't he?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And Cliff Cumber's got good taste, most of the time. He likes this. he likes this show, so, you know.
There you go. He's all right. Can't have
but Sarah's work is haunting. It really gets under your skin, which I think is quite, you know, that if you go tell a folk horror story, you have to tell something that is going to stay with someone. And also, she has a brilliant way of doing her biography on the back of each of the books. You've got the natural sort of, like, some pull quotes for some people, but my favourite one is, when not making comics, Sarah likes sitting and staring at rivers or the sea if she has a chance to get near it. She also likes staring at rocks, certain kinds of small animal, and your face, especially your face, your beautiful, beautiful face.
Thank you.
She must have been talking about Tony when she
with that. Yeah.
But yes, you can find more of her work at sarah-gordon.com. At Instagram and Twitter, she's not Sarah Gordon. And I mean that in the sense of like, not Sarah Gordon, or one word. And great artwork. I'm definitely going to be getting more. Actually, when I got the set of this, I got a sort of badge with it as well. So I'm extra pleased.
You love a badge, don't you?
I'm growing. My addiction to badges is just growing. But I think this was a Kickstarter set that was fulfilled as well. So it's it shows the longevity of a Kickstarter campaign. Because we always, I don't know why, sometimes in the back of your mind you just sort of think, well, the books are out for that Kickstarter campaign. Once they're done and everyone's been fulfilled, the book is then gone. You know, I mean, you don't really think that when everyone's got their sort of pledge, you're still going to have these books and you're still going to be selling these, and like, you never know who's going to. I mean, I certainly missed out on this Kickstarter campaign, but now I've got a set of four. So it shows, like, if you do good books, they will always have a shelf life. So So discover more of Sarah's work, because it's great, and we'll probably, you know, judging by her sort of sense of humour, she'll have to be on the show in the future, I think.
I do like her stuff. I think we follow each other on Twitter and stuff, and I'm always interested to see what she's got out.
And I think she'd put up with us if
I think so.
Speaking of put up with us, Jen, would you like to recommend
anything else? Jen again.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. I just have one more thing. And so it's, let's see. So it's apparently part of the Art Masters series from the Self-Made Hero is the publisher.
Oh, okay.
And it's specifically, it's the Gogon, The Other World, which is by, oh, God, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, Fabrizio Dori.
I was looking at this just today on Comixology. Funny you should mention that. To be fair, I haven't pulled the trigger on it, so convince me. Go on.
Okay. Well, it's... Yeah. It's really great. It's essentially a look back at, so essentially at the end, so spoilers for reality, Gauguin dies, and essentially the whole book is him sort of reflecting back on his life in sort of his last moments, and his sort of what drove him to become a painter, and sort of, you get the sense he was kind of a jerk, but if you know anything about him from history, that was already kind of obvious.
Yeah.
But what I really love so much about this book is the art style. It was specifically done, like, every panel looks like a painting. It could absolutely be, like, it's in Gauguin's style, and every panel looks like a complete painting. And what I love about that so much is that comics are so often, like, undervalued. They're not seen as, you know, art on the same level, or at least, I don't know, maybe it's treated a little differently in obviously different parts of the world, but yeah, it's often seen as sort of a not as respected or not as important as other arts, but just seeing a comic where every single panel looks like it could be in a museum, it really helps drive home just sort of the value of comics as a medium and sort of the beauty that can come from it. So it's really great.
Nice. Funny enough, we got sent a book, Siberian Haiku, by Self-Made Hero this week. So I shall be talking about that next week, I think.
Self-Made Looks Hero, amazing. A great publisher. And like, they're putting out a lot of like varied and fantastic books. So, yeah, this one sounds really good, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Nice. I love that. I love that. I think that's a European book, I think, that they've translated. I think I'm right in saying.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's French. I think I think it's translated originally from French.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it was because they have a thing going with Europe Comics as well, I think. So a lot of their stuff is coming through from Europe Comics, who obviously we are big supporters of. Yeah. But good stuff. Yeah, I'll look out for that one, mate. Yeah, excellent.
Nice. So there you go. Loads of fantastic recommendations for you and lots of fantastic chat. And once again, thank you, Jen, for being with us for this week's episode.
Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, mate.
And sharing this time with us. When the world is crazy. But hopefully we've entertained you all out there for the past couple of hours, and no doubt added to your wish lists, which is what we do on a weekly basis. So you're welcome, and we're sorry. But if you want to let us know about any I don't know, events or important news when it comes to your local comic book store or a comic book event or anything like that. If you want to ask us anything or you want us to put a shout out about, certainly in this time where people are sharing a lot of resources and things, let us know, because, you know, like we say, we've got Facebook pages and we're creating groups for everyone to get involved as well. So email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. Where, as we tick down to 250, we'll probably be announcing a bit more of. We don't know what we're doing.
Yeah,
no, not actually that certain, but we've got plans. No. We've got vague plans.
Yeah. There's a few plans for things going on. There's also, you know, we're doing a bit of scheduling and planning the next sort of few months for you lovely people. So there's going to be plenty of content to come up, and there's loads of books that we still need to read in our to read pile. So don't worry. The recommendations are going to keep coming.
Yeah.
And if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And like we say, join that group. Even if you don't have to like Facebook, I don't like Facebook, but I only log on to look at Awesome Comics Talk, the group, which is fantastic. A fantastic community of people. It's getting that time of the night. And my tongue swells up. Don't make it like that, Tony.
Get on the reading group. Go and do that, because I want to hear what people think about this book. I've just had a look at it. I've got my own opinion.
Yeah. There's reading groups. There's art groups. There's all kinds. Keep spreading the love of comics and keep listening to this show. And thank you for listening to it, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, share, subscribe, leave a review. Let us know what you think. And if you listen to us on any other networks, Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Podblat.
Oh dear, it's funny because it's an in joke that you'll never know.
Yeah, which I can never repeat.
You can never repeat, but trust me, I was crying after. But thank you once again for listening, folks. Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Tribute-press.com @tributepress. Go over there and look to see what we've got planned. Me and the Falp have got some plans.
Can't wait.
Nice. Oh, I like the way you changed it up this week, Tony. Nice.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. What about you, Dan?
You can read Vanguard totally for free. Go to Vanguard at Vanguard. VanguardComic.com.
You've got it as well, dude.
It's all there to read. Check it out. It's all on Comic House 2. And you can find me talking smack on Twitter. At Vanguard Comics.
He does look at a lot of smack. He's like Dwayne Johnson.
Back when he was The Rock.
I'm more like Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And you can find me on social media at Jester Diablo on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. I've been beavering away at doing artwork recently, so I'll be...
You said about backgrounds.
Oh, flatting, man. Oh, my...
Fucking shit.
My God. And it's purely... Why did I ever decide to do backgrounds? What a ridiculous idea. But no, the stuff I'm working on is a little bit more detailed. And have you, any of you out there, drawn an office?
And no, Christ, why would I do that?
How did you feel about that? Let us know. Then get in touch with me. But yeah, you can find me online at Jesse Diablo. And you'll probably see a bit more of my work soon.
There better be a frame picture of me in the background. That's all I'm saying.
There's always a frame picture of you.
That's true.
Everywhere. Actually, I might do that. I might put you into my book somewhere.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
Good to put stuff like that in backgrounds.
Yeah.
I love doing it.
I think I'm going to have a few moments where there are going to be more sort of crowd scenes. In fact, I'll say it now. Right, shall I just announce this now and ask if
anyone wants this? Yeah. Do it.
Right, I've got an upcoming page because Indigo Park is about a national park in America, a fictional national park in America. So there's lots of tourists that come through this place, and I've got a couple of pages where there's tourists, you know, interacting with the park rangers. If you want to be one of those tourists, then let me know.
Maybe £100.
No, well, you'll be in there for free. But you may not be a nice person. Because some of the tourists are nice and some of them are just a pain in the ass.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. I will put a shout out close to the time, but please let me know if you don't mind being made to look an absolute fool. Yeah, an absolute ass. But one person who isn't and has been an absolutely fantastic guest is JWC. So once again, where can people find you online, etc., and read your books?
Yeah, well, you can read everything on Comic House, and especially since they've now got that, was it the COVID-19?
Yes.
Thing. So so it's a great time to pick up Comic House if you haven't yet. But yeah, I'm mostly just on Twitter. It's JWC, spelled phonetically, and I have no excuse for that decision other than decisions were made.
It was a dumb deal.
Yeah. That's the best response ever. Well, decisions were made.
That's the best I've heard. Yeah.
Yes. Go forth, follow, read lots of comics. Have a brilliant week, everyone. Stay safe. And stay reading. Well, just keep reading lots of comics.
Stay indoors, for fuck's sake.
Stay indoors, read lots of comics, make comics.
This is like heaven. This is what we've been waiting for, folks. This is our dream. That we don't have to go to work.
No, Tony, no, it's not necessarily our dream. It's our dream in certain aspects.
Well, there's the thing with me and Councillor Troy, but if you get past that.
For me, next week I've got to become a full-time teacher and then a full-time designer, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah,
let's see how that works now.
Yeah. But wherever you are and whatever you're doing, we love you. You know it. So read lots of comics. Have an awesome week. And from Dan, Tony, Jen, and myself, just stay brilliant, stay healthy. And what else do they do, guys?
They're awesome.
Yeah.
Most uncoordinated one so far.
Great. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Yeah.